Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we hope to be the podcast for you. And we have something very, very special this week. Cats in the room!
Yes, yes. And also, as you hear giggling, and as promised, we have brought a guest who worked at Universal Studios. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Dawn, and I did work at Universal Studios from... I did Halloween Horror Nights in 93, and then 94, and then from 95 to about 2001...
So a long time.
Yeah.
This is how you know you're dealing with a vet when we're abstract on the exact years involved.
Yeah, I could go back to my resume and see, you know, what I punched
there. That's okay.
We didn't ask her to bring her resume with her, a calendar, or anything.
Yeah.
I apologize. But yeah, so long, long time. Many, many Halloween Horror Nights in there.
Yeah, before I even worked for them, I think I didn't miss a Halloween Horror Night, even as a guest. Except for when I've lived in New Orleans.
And
when
did you move to New Orleans? I broke her. I broke Dawn.
Yeah.
Someone fix her.
We were here 3 years before the storm, and then we were back in Orlando for a little while, and I've been back here for about five and a half years now.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So how did you get interested in Halloween in general?
It's one of those things where you just, it's always been my favorite holiday, and dressing up, and I was a theater kid, and
right.
So there was that, and vampires, and ghosts, and witches have always been...
All the cool kids were into
right,
that.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. All the things the cool kids were reading about.
Nowadays you'll get beat up for reading about vampires, but...
That's because they sparkle.
When I was growing up, they have all kinds of stuff now, because
right.
I'm not telling you how old I am, but there was very, very little literature. I mean, obviously you had the classics like Dracula,
right.
And Camille, and somebody a lot of people don't know about, but if you can get hold of it, Chelsea Yarborough, who did the St. Germain series, is still doing the St. Germain series, and she's, like, in her 80s.
Wow.
And it's such a great series. So, she's, like, pre-Anne Rice.
We should mention that Dawn is a book aficionado and an avid reader.
So, if there are detours into literature, it is just par for the course.
I'm just a little bit of a nerd. I'm eclectic.
That's okay.
I call myself eclectic.
That's perfectly fine. We like eclectic here.
Nice.
Very cool.
But, so yeah, you've always kind of been into Halloween, though.
Yeah.
Halloween,
and
theater, just
and
yeah.
I'm going to guess, because this is, I think, is true of 90% of haunters, I know you were going and visiting haunted houses well before you ever acted in one.
I'm kind of a scaredy cat, actually.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't usually go
I'm learning.
Through, yeah, I don't go through them, but I love putting them on.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I belonged to a community theater, and every year we did a haunted house as a
right.
fundraiser. So I did that for a few years before I got hired at Universal.
Okay, so that was your start.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit of the community theater haunt, then. What was that experience like?
Well, it was cool because we actually were in a theater that had been a movie house for a while, and then it was a community theater, and it was supposed to be haunted itself, but then, you know, we would set up the haunted house, and you'd walk through the actual, like, the whole theater and stage and backstage and stuff.
Right.
And that was really cool because we had, you know, props and... You know, really professional-looking costumes and stuff like that.
Well,
so.
It's interesting for me because I hear all the time about theater groups putting on haunts or getting involved with haunts. That just makes sense. I mean, one of the tips we gave when talking about haunt recruiting, first place to go, your local school theater troupe.
Yeah.
One of the first places to turn to.
Yeah.
But you don't often hear about haunted attractions in theaters. I don't think I've heard of another example of that. Crystal, can you correct me? I'm overlooking something.
Actually, I think Kyle might have worked in one.
Yeah, Kyle. We'd have to reference Kyle to bring him back in. But yeah, I think he might have worked. I know we had the art gallery with the haunted attraction in the basement. It was called the Haunted Basement. So
yeah,
they were wanting for creative names.
Well, in my college, you know, the theater department had a haunted house in the basement, and our whole campus is supposedly haunted. So, you know, there's that.
But yeah, you usually don't hear about it in the theater, though.
Yeah.
But you know, it sounds.
The Phantom of the Opera was great there. Just saying.
But yeah. So you got to experience like the thrill of haunting there, and yeah. I suppose that's what it's what I find for people that I know that are into haunting. It's a very infectious thing. You do it once, usually kind of as a lark.
Right.
And then it's like, bring back Halloween. Oh.
Yeah.
It's like you're addicted to it immediately. And you know, so what was it about haunting that you've discovered at that theater that really hooked you?
Just getting that scare, you know, getting the thrill of scaring other people, especially since I am a scaredy cat. You know, you know, kind of turning the tables on other people is fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. That's what a lot of us do it for.
You know, and you're not that unusual, though, among people who don't like going to...
Don't tell her she's normal.
But no, I'm thinking we've had plenty of people work with us that have not liked going to haunts, but love being in them. Love being in that position of power in them.
I do remember the first haunted house I went through. It was some little JC.
Yeah, the JC.
Yes, and it was the local like little league or whatever put it on, and it was in a tent. Uh-huh. And we were going through, and you could see the guy jumping out, and you knew, like, I knew I was going to be the person because you could count like every third person he'd jump out.
Right,
and I refused. And my sister's, like, pushing me, and she's like, you know he's there. And I'm like, I don't care. He's going to jump out at me. That's how much of a scaredy cat I am.
So even when, like, everything's, like, fully telegraphed from a mile away.
Yeah, and, like, even the cheesy ones. Now, I have been through a few of the Universal Haunted Houses.
Right.
Which is, you know, a lot grander scale, but even that, I, you know, kind of... Well. You know.
So, like, with the theater haunt, though, going back to that, because I always like hearing how people got started in haunting. It's always fascinating. You guys would, like, assume paint sets or create sets, or were you just using the theater?
Well, both. I mean, the theater's gorgeous. It, you know, it's old-timey. Mm-hmm. Everything's plush and wood and brass, and, you know, it's the perfect setting. But then, you know, we would put up sets and stuff like that, and, you know, especially since we took them, you know, it wound through backstage where a lot of it wasn't as pretty, so we'd have to do things. And you know, the good thing about that is, you know, we could paint the room and just repaint it when it was over. So
right.
You know, we were able to do a lot of that. So
well, that's good. Yeah. That makes it a little bit easier.
I really do love in general haunts that have a place like that. That's cool naturally without a lot of mucking about.
Right.
Like the mortuary here in New Orleans has that.
Mm-hmm.
The Abyss in St. Louis had that. Even though you couldn't flipping see it in the Abyss. So goddamn dark. Beautiful cave structure underneath St. Louis.
Oh, that's cool.
Totally spooky, totally scary. Yeah. Could not see a goddamn thing. It was so dark.
The only reason I know it was a cave structure was because one little light was pointing up at the ceiling spot.
Like someone bumped it. I go, look, a cave.
It's like, wow, atmosphere. What do you know?
But yeah, it's one of those things. But yeah, I do enjoy those types of things. And it's really cool when you've got that to start with. Because most haunts are starting in metal buildings or warehouses or what have you. And it's tough. You've got to work your ass off to build up that ambiance.
Yeah.
Where if you've got a cool building, it's like,
even with Universal, as obviously high budget they have, you know, they still have to, you know, they kind of work around the structures that they already have.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's when it's the sound stage, it's easy. You know, they'll put the sets and stuff up, but they still have to work to create that ambiance.
Yeah. So we haven't actually been to Universal Horror Nights.
Yeah.
Do they set it up in existing buildings then? Is that what I'm understanding that are used for other things during the year?
Well, it's both. It kind of depends on the year and what's available.
Right.
There was, you know, a couple of buildings that they had were using. The bigger problem, too, is as big as it gets, they have to change buildings. You know, when it's little and not a lot of people are going, you know, when they first started out, they had two haunted houses. The first year was... They opened in 90, and the first Halloween Horror Nights, which actually wasn't called Halloween Horror Nights, it was Fright Nights, was in 91. And they had two haunted houses. I don't remember where one of them was, but one of them, they set it up in the queue line for Jaws, because Jaws wasn't open at that point.
Right. Right.
So they actually just took the ropes down and put a haunted house. So they actually had a haunted house in the queue line for Jaws.
Wow.
And
I've got to say, A, admire the ingenuity.
Yeah.
B, really love the irony.
Yeah.
Making right. the attraction the queue line.
Yeah. So it was, you know, kind of like that. And now they have, you know, specific places that they can set up. And there was a couple of years where they tried to do it in Islands of Adventure. But that is very, like, the studios, of course, is built to be a back lot.
Right.
So you can move things around. You can kind of change things.
Right.
Islands of Adventure is very set up, you know. Island had its own thing.
Right.
And Seuss Landing, contractually, they weren't allowed to use that in Halloween. Dr. Seuss's widow would not give them permission to set up any kind of haunting in Seuss Landing. So, basically, you know...
Dr. Seuss is kind of creepy and scary on his own.
He is.
So,
well, you know, and hey, I'm contractually obligated as an asshole to point out as Dr. Seuss, but everyone says Seuss anyways.
Yeah.
So,
but I'm the jerk of the group. I acknowledge that.
Then
but,
we would just think that you were making up something about soy sauce.
Right.
Everyone says it's Seuss. I think now at this point we just call him Dr. Seuss. We've given up. We've given up the ghost on that one.
But
hey, I didn't realize there was a Dr. Seuss land at Universal.
There is, because you've got two... You've got two parks. You've got the original studios, and then you have the Islands of Adventure.
Yeah.
And each island has a different...
Like theme type thing going on, yeah.
And one of them is Seuss Landing.
Okay, cool. So they could not use Seuss Landing because of the heirs to the Seuss estate.
The contracts and stuff. So they
he did not write his will in rhyme, I am super disappointed.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just throwing that out now.
Yeah, she was very integral in how everything was set up and everything. So she's,
protecting it.
The contracted stuff and the licensing, it's very, you know, tricky.
You hear that a lot, though, about the widows and the estates being even more active, more involved than the original authors. That happened with Ray Charles's estate. That happened, apparently, to the Seuss estate. It also happened to the Bram Stoker estate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think Bram Stoker himself would have given two farts about Nosferatu, but his widow sure as heck did.
Right.
Yeah.
So, another one whose widow is very active, there's a Bob Marley in City Walk. There's a Bob Marley club, and his wife, or his widow.
Widow now, yeah.
Came in and made sure that everything was exactly right.
Yeah, that's also true. But yeah, so that's interesting, though. It's kind of refreshing because as haunters, I always think of Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights as being like the pinnacle, the top tier, and it is. Mm-hmm. But it's refreshing to hear. Oh yeah, the first year they set up in the queue line of Jaws, and put up some walls and went to town.
I will say that it took them a really long time to get it all together,
even with all that money, even with everything.
Well, the first couple of years, I didn't work there, but you could see that they didn't have a lot of budget. But one thing that Universal Orlando does is have a great creative team.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can see it in all of the shows and all of that stuff. Because when I worked for Universal, I was in entertainment, so. Mm-hmm. That's what I did, and I got to meet all these really talented actors and the people who do the writing and all of that. So their creative team is spectacular.
Well,
yeah, and I can imagine if you point to that team and say, "Make me a haunted house," they're just salivating at the chance.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's, you know, the props people that are there will, you know, make me this. And I remember a friend of mine was working on one of the things they have every year, they call it Bill and Ted, because it's based around Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Right.
And they take whatever's pop culture that year and they write a show about it.
Okay.
And
okay, I can dig this.
Yeah.
It's parody. It's fun, and it's one of the things that everybody looks forward to. And one year they did a Spider-Man, and this friend of mine that does the props, he did the Goblin's pumpkins.
Right.
That really glowed.
Yeah.
And he built the glider, and the guy came in on the glider. So that was really cool. So, you know, they really do a lot with what they have.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like it.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with Universal? What was your start there?
Well, I answered a want ad in the newspaper.
Okay. Back when newspapers
were very relevant.
Yes, I was still.
I halfway expect her to say Craigslist. I don't know why.
That's because this year. That's what we're doing now.
I'm not telling you how old I am.
Yeah.
But I was still in high school, and it was, you know, just the third or fourth year of Halloween Horror Nights. And about a month before, you know, Halloween, I saw an ad in a want ad in the newspaper for seeking people who are into scaring other people, must be okay with animals, stuff like that. And I knew what it was because they have a rat lady every year.
Right.
And usually she
must be okay with animals, does not mention rats.
Right. And something about clothes in places. Somewhere in some scrapbook, I have the original want ad because I save everything.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Much to my roommate's chagrin, I save everything.
Well, they're moving soon, so you'll be fine.
It's okay.
You can get more stuff. Yeah.
But so I answered the want ad, and I went in, and they called me back, and I went over to, I went to Orlando because I wasn't living in Orlando at the time, and I auditioned, and they put you in a coffin. But it didn't.
All the best job interviews start
right.
in a coffin.
You know, the first thing I did,
this is what I'm hoping happens.
Yeah,
and they had like a screen instead of a coffin lid.
Yeah,
and they put you in a coffin with rats, and you just had to scream. And that was my audition, and I got it. And
wow.
So that was my door into Universal.
Cool.
So, was a screen door with rats behind it.
Yes.
That was your door into Universal.
I screamed
that's cool,
very
though.
Well, and I got the part, and I did that. And then the following year, based on my tech experience, I actually wasn't in a house. I was doing part of a show.
Uh-huh.
Before Beetlejuice had his own show.
Right.
They had him just for seasonal stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so they had a show based around Beetlejuice, and I was a tech for that. And I got to know some of the other techs who got me in an interview with the heads of techs. So that's how I got the job at, like, full-on Universal.
Oh,
wow, cool. And then you started working pretty much full-time.
Right.
With Universal.
That was my job.
Yeah.
And then
that's a pretty cool job to have on your resume. Just saying.
My first
knows Beetlejuice personally.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my first show that I worked at Universal was Ghostbusters.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So I have pictures.
I gotta go to Universal.
So
is what
you know
I'm learning
who to
all
call. You know.
I do know who to call. I do still have friends who were Ghostbusters. They've moved on because that show's not there anymore.
Maybe it's coming back now.
Yeah, it might be rebooted.
Awesome.
New movie.
The firehouse is still there. The set, the facade for the firehouse is still there.
Yeah, not the actual firehouse. The actual firehouse is in New York.
Yeah.
There is an actual, you can go visit the firehouse.
The New York back lot that we have.
Yeah.
Has the library, and it has the firehouse.
Cool.
So... But
do we want to hear this audition scream, or is that going to mess with your levels? No, not anymore.
All right, fair enough.
Not
screaming.
All right, fair enough. I don't know if this microphone will be able to do it justice anyways.
I will traumatize the poor cats.
Oh, yeah, we have cats in here looking at us.
See, this one's...
Yeah. We are not in the usual enclosed room. It wasn't... The usual space we record in is not big enough for three people, so...
Yeah.
It's not good enough for this, so we had to move to a different room. And this, we have to deal with cats and unintended companions through this podcast. But so far, they're behaving, so don't screw it up. But
screaming's probably a bad idea.
Yeah. You got to realize, and this is giving away tech stuff about the podcast, we keep, like, the most basic setup we can for editing purposes. We have one mic, three people sitting around it, and yeah, I'm worried it would have clipped all hell and would screw up all my filters.
Okay, but, so back on topic,
yes.
The first show you worked on was Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. And what after that?
Let's see, I worked for the Ghostbusters, and then I worked for A Day in the Park with Barney.
Okay, well, that's a little less exciting.
And then I
How many kids did you kill? Just asking.
Did not.
Oh.
Want to, though. That's a different question.
No, the kids are awesome. Parents, oh. On the other hand.
Okay.
We know a thing about parents.
I think all the haunters in the world just went,
I worked with, I didn't work the Beetlejuice, the regular show, but I did work his Halloween show twice. Right. So I did that. I did work for Beetlejuice a couple times. Let's see. I worked at the horror makeup show.
What is that about?
It's basically about the makeup that they do in Hollywood, and they'll do like the show you simple
so the
CGI.
Demonstrations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds pretty cool.
I was a stage tech for that, which was fun. Because the gag at the end was the fly, you know, the pods,
right?
And there was a switch, and the actor would come out in the I worked the mechanical fly for that.
Cool.
And then I worked for another show that's...
So wait, the fly's mechanical? My whole world is destroyed.
Well, one of them was.
Jeff Goldblum's mechanical? Is that what you're saying?
It would explain a lot.
It would,
it
actually.
It would, yeah.
Like how he doesn't look any different in the new Independence Day film than he did in the first one?
Yeah.
And then another show that's not there was the Alfred Hitchcock Art of Making Movies, which was very cool, and I was a stage tech for that, too.
So a stage tech, you were operating lights and anything else that was needed.
Actually, I was what they call a stage assistant in shows that require volunteers and interaction with the audience.
Right.
They have people that
do
that.
The plants, yeah.
No, most of our volunteers are not plants.
Oh, okay.
They are
at Disney, I'll tell you that much straight out.
Yeah. No.
So Universal,
no plants.
There are no plants.
This is useful information.
Yes.
I'm learning stuff here.
Yeah. Now, like... Say, for instance, Ghostbusters, we had, like, a pre-show that had volunteers, and they were just random people from the audience. And then in the main show, somebody would get up and interact with the actor, and he was a plant, but he was obviously an actor, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but yeah, they weren't plants.
That's good to know.
So, but you needed somebody to show the volunteers where to go and where to stand, and that's what I did, and I reset the props and made sure the props were in the right places, and, you know, helped out the actors when necessary, you know.
And ran animatronic flies when needed.
Animatronic flies. I also, in that show, there's a pile of body parts, and you're sticking your hand... And your hand is one of the body parts. And then, you know, as
That's
people
clever.
Are filing in, you know, you start moving your hand.
You flop it around a little bit.
Yeah.
like a severed limb jumping around.
Yeah. And there was specific things you had to do with your hand. You
flip
just,
them off. No.
You,
you couldn't do the Princess Diana wave.
Right.
Yeah.
Little cup hands.
Miss America.
No improv-ing with the arm. So that
Shake
was,
people's hands.
That sounds like pretty strict instructions then.
Oh,
a lot of creativity in being able to...
Well, my job wasn't acting.
Right.
So, and the actors...
And that makes sense, though.
Yeah. So, they get paid a lot more to do that and be creative and, we were just, there to help the actors, so...
Right. Well, I'm sure Universal has pretty strict rules on all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of rehearsals anyway.
And, like, one of the people we met at HauntCon... was the guy that recruits and trains the sliders at Universal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And talked about the strict regimen they are put through.
Well, it's just a lot of... There's safety involved. You're dealing with the public, so you can't do anything that's going to be offensive. And,
right.
You know. Plus, there's also, you can't go off script. If you've only got 20 minutes to do a show,
right.
You can't do a 20-minute monologue and,
Yeah.
So
everybody's got to know their parts exactly,
right?
And have it down,
and some of those shows, like you'll do a 20-minute show and then have to turn around and do the same show, in 20 minutes, and do the same show in 20 minutes. And
Did they do actor breaks?
They have more than one cast.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's double cast setup.
Yeah,
I think that he mentioned that too, but.
Yeah. Well, and
even with the haunted houses and stuff.
You've got to double up.
Yeah. Like, when I was the rat lady, there was three of us, and we would rotate.
It's good for them, especially in a screaming role, that's really good, because your voice is going to be blown out in one night if you have to do every scream.
Yeah, because one of us would be in the box with the rats, one of us would stay outside to make sure the girl in the box was okay, and then one person would be on break, so we'd rotate.
Yeah.
And my question is, how'd you keep the rats in the box when you changed? Because
well, it was actually that year, the house was built on top of us. Like, we were under the floor.
Yeah.
Right.
But that was because the floor was above us.
Yeah, it was an elevated floor,
We were actually on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we were on pavement, actually.
Uh-huh.
Because I think we were behind the earthquake attraction. Okay. And so...
Earthquake attraction, perfectly fine in Florida, less so in California.
It's a different game entirely.
Yeah.
And there was a wall, and we'd have to, like, climb over the wall to get into, like kind of climb in and out. And so the rats couldn't get over. You just have to make sure you aren't squishing rats, because there was about 50 of them in there with you.
Oh, gotcha.
That's how you get rat paste.
Well, yeah.
Ratatouille.
The rats were fed swine.
Good night, everybody.
Year, they had rats, they had snakes, and they had roaches. And they had the big hissing cockroaches.
Yeah.
Crystal's favorite.
I will tell you that the guy that got that part got it because he kissed the roach in the audition.
That would be a way to get that part.
Yes.
I would not have gotten that part.
Nope.
There would have been a dead roach.
I'm fine with the snakes and I'm fine with the rats. But the rats were just... feeders that the snake people brought with them.
Right.
So they weren't pet rats or anything like that.
Right.
And they were fed swine feet because it was just, you know, what they had.
Yeah.
So their poop stank. So that was the only thing.
The sacrifices of haunting.
I never squished any rats, but there was...
Did deal with some stank rat poop.
Yes. So...
How often did they have to clean out the box?
I think they did the it area. Like every day.
Hopefully. Okay.
There was no way to really clean, like, air it out. They just kind of hosed it.
Hopefully they've gotten a better way to do that now.
Well, that was the only year they did it like that. Usually the rat lady is in a coffin.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now they don't even put her in a house. They actually put her in a coffin that they wheel around, and you can kind of come around and take pictures with her.
Oh, okay. So she's the photo op now.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, the year I did it, we were in a box.
Only in the haunt industry does that sentence make sense. You wheel the rat lady around for a photo op.
She's a photo op now, you know, in the coffin.
Only in this industry does that sentence make any sense.
Yeah.
Say that in banking and watch what happens.
Well, I'm sure you could say it in banking. It would just not...
Social Security asks you to leave.
Right.
So, other than the rat lady, did you play anything else at Universal, or was that pretty much...
That was my big acting gig. I like tech. I like doing, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff and
well,
that.
And so what was... Go ahead.
And one of the things about tech that I think is really, really cool is, A, it is kind of one of the forgotten roles of haunting.
Yeah.
Every haunt has tech people, even our small haunt has it.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that about tech I find is that when you work that, you get to see the reactions a lot better sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're not the one they're running from, necessarily.
Right.
You're in that position where you can see it. And so, did you get a lot of that experience? We were seeing and observing how people were responding to the shows and responding to what you were
Definitely.
Doing.
Definitely. And when I left Universal and then I went as a third party and what I was doing is psychic readings and they would have us in the parks doing the readings too. And that was good because then I could just kind of step back and really observe all of that.
Right.
Because, you know, watching them run from the chainsaws is always good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were set up one year, like, right outside. You know, you have your houses, And then they have what they call scare zones.
Right.
Where you know you're going to walk through, and there's going to be people jumping out at you. There's going to be people kind of, you know, and they're interacting, and they're not allowed to touch you. You know, it's the same rules.
Yeah.
But it's usually really dark and really foggy, and there's lots of noise, and sometimes there's fire that shoots up and stuff like that. And we were right outside of, like, this vampire zone. And, you know, it was sort of gothic, Victorian, in the neighborhood that we were set up, like, on the back lot. So they kind of took advantage of that and watching people run from the vampires and whatnot was fun.
So what was the best scare that you've seen
or been a part of?
Yeah.
The chainsaws.
Yeah?
You know, we the thing about it is this. We always kind of rag on the overuse of chainsaws on this podcast.
Because they're like every haunted house.
Well, I will tell you, the Universal, originally they had a chainsaw drill team.
Okay.
That used to come through.
Once again, this is one of those expressions that only works in the haunted. Unless you're like a lumberjack or something, chainsaw drill team.
They would come through and they would actually do drills and stuff like that. And instead of rifles, they had chainsaws.
That sounds like a pretty cool show to watch.
Yeah. And they were just, you know, atmosphere. And so that was really cool. And then at the end, of course, they would run through. But my favorite, and this was a chainsaw too, we used to have, I don't work there anymore.
That's okay, you're part of the team.
Originally, we had the Bates Motel and the house from Psycho.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was actually used in Psycho 4.
Oh, the actual?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not often. Okay, that's another one of those things, like, you hear about in, like, Haunts. Yeah, we did, like, the Bates Hotel. No, they actually had the Bates Hotel. Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, when Universal first opened, we had the hotel and in the house, and it was up on a hill, and it was really scary. And the first 2 years of Halloween Horror Nights, they had this show, and you know how the hotel kind of makes an L.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they would set up bleachers so that you were seeing the hotel as the backdrop, or the motel as the backdrop.
Uh-huh.
And they, I mean, obviously it's just a set, so there's not really, like, you can't go into the hotel.
Yeah,
it's
just an empty building.
It was an empty building, so people could go in and out the different doors, and it was just inside. It was one
like
building.
Like a Scooby-Doo.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what happened, is they had, you know, this thing where people were running in and out of the doors, and I forget, somebody that doesn't usually have a chainsaw, like Jason or Freddy or something like that, he would, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre guy.
Uh-huh. Leatherface.
So, Leatherface. Yeah. Like, he kind of showed up, like, a couple of times here and there, mm-hmm. but you didn't know where he was at the end, so at the very last minute, he's under the bleachers with a chainsaw. You have never seen people move so fast, because the last time you saw him, he ran into the motel.
Yeah. Right.
So,
and there's no clear path out and behind the bleachers, yes.
Right. So at the end of the show, everybody's like, all right, it's time to go. And you hear that chainsaw rev underneath you. I've never seen people move so fast.
That's a great way to clear out, you know, the room.
Next show's the 20 man.
Yeah, that was my favorite use of the chainsaw. Was it was under the bleachers.
Yeah, you know, that sounds awesome.
And that's, the chainsaw is great for clearing out. We've discussed this before on the podcast. It's a great tool for clearing out. That's why you put it at the end of your haunt if you're going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Is to keep people from lingering near exits and so forth, and keep people to push people out. Mm-hmm. Basically,
right.
It's a great instrument for that, because even people that aren't scared of it. It's the Universal playing you off in a haunt.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, that idea of using underneath the bleachers is pretty darn cool. I mean, I really like that idea. And that's one of the things, is playing with expectations. Because you go to a show at something mm-hmm. Universal there, there are certain rules that mm-hmm. come with being, I'm in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm safe. The show is out there.
Right.
Right.
I'm not actually in any danger. They're not going to come scare me.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference, I think, between Halloween Horror Nights and other theme park, like even daytime Universal,
mm-hmm.
is you're in it.
Yeah.
You're having to walk through these scare zones where during the day, it's fine. Nothing's wrong. Everything looks good.
The worst thing that might happen to you is you pay $8 for a beer.
Right. Yeah. But they turn off all the lights. They put the scary music on. And there's smoke. And there's people screaming. And, you know, they have what they call scent cannons.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know how they...
Those, yeah.
Yeah. So they have those all around. So you're 100% immersed. And there's no, safe place. And I think that's one thing that you know... The reason why people go to Universal Halloween Horror Nights is there's no, here's a well-lit place.
Yeah.
You know, there's no place that you are feeling like you're safe.
You're always on edge.
So there's no safe zone. There's no
Right. Yeah. And there's the scare zones, but even when there's not scare zones, it's still dark. You're still seeing shadows on the
atmosphere.
Wall. Right. So then
you get the scent and all that.
Right. So there's no real place where you can step back and say, okay, I'm going to catch my breath. You know, you're just running from one eerie, scary place to another.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty awesome. We'll have to try and do it one year.
Yeah, we're going to have to. Now, one thing that Universal is famous for is its themes.
Mm-hmm.
The new themes, and like we've been reporting, the themes have been coming up this year already. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one, mm-hmm. and Poltergeist, I think, was the other. Wasn't it? Was it put in the...
I don't remember.
I think it was... Oh, we'll look it up. It's in our show notes. But they seem to be doing a 70s thing this year so far, the themes. Yeah. What are some of your favorite themes from years gone by?
Well, I've liked when they've created characters. Oh. I mean,
so you don't like it when they do the movie ones.
Well, the movie ones are good too, but we've had one year. I think there was Chucky when Bride of Chucky came out. I think for 2 years running, he was like the main guy. And then we had Crypt Keeper 1 year. I think they did a Freddy versus Jason.
They probably did. I'm sure they had too.
They've created they have a scary clown. There was one that was a puppet master. So they have their own a Bloody Mary woman kind of thing. And then they did the director 1 year because why not? It's a studio, so it's a haunted studio.
Right.
The year before I moved back here after the storm. Was one of my favorites because they did the classic monsters.
Yes.
All of the houses were based, or each house was based around a classic monster. And it was the year that the Wolfman was Benicio del Toro, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Came out, so they had a soundstage that was all, American Werewolf in London, or the Wolfman, Frankenstein was all very steampunk and steamy, and then
cool.
Dracula's haunted house was Victorian,
and it was actually The Exorcist.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, Crystal corrected me. It was The Exorcist. Yeah.
We were guessing last time that would be the next one they announced.
Yeah,
that's
it
right.
Makes
I remember
sense
thinking
that.
Poltergeist it was Exorcist, but yeah, that's the thing about Universal is they have this incredibly rich, incredibly deep library of movie monsters.
Right.
But even with that, they still invent new ones just for Halloween Horror Nights, which I find interesting enough. But I was just thinking about this while you were talking about all the stuff they were doing, like Frankenstein and so forth, that it's kind of like official fan fiction in a weird way.
Right.
Yeah.
They're kind of doing official fan fiction, like even just having, Leatherface there at the Bates Motel.
Right.
That right there sounds like something a high schooler would have scrawled in
exactly
a notebook.
So
and then Leatherface showed up and chopped Bateman into bits.
I haven't been to Universal in Hollywood, but they have Rob Zombie do a house every year.
Yeah,
right.
Which is cool. And I forget who, somebody else had come in and done one. So, going out to Hollywood, I think they even have, a little bit of a bigger budget. So.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think I'm like you, though. I like the idea of they've been creating new ones just for Halloween Horror Nights. Because, I get it. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist, all that stuff. It's great in advertising. It's great for getting people pumped.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is we know those stories. We are super familiar with them and the characters.
Right.
So the idea of something new and that's truly unknown is, to me, even more appealing.
Well, it's good because then you can come up with your own scares. You can kind of, you know, with the storylines, you can kind of, you know, deviate from that, and you won't have those people going, "Oh, well, that didn't happen."
And that's one of the things. And that's one of the things that we do here is we oftentimes write the stories to what we have available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what we have at our disposal. We edge the stories that way, and we can come up with really great stories that way. It's just a matter of being imaginative. But yeah, that's the difference of building and then creating a story versus creating a story then building. When your story was written in the 70s, you've got to do what you can to make your build and your acting and everything. It's follow that,
right? And I think that's why they only did the Islands of Adventure like a couple of years in a row, because you know there's only so much you can do with Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
You know, and there's only so much you can do. Like, there's not really a lot you can do with this stuff that's already set in stone.
Right.
You know, so mm-hmm. I think that's why they primarily stay in the studio, because they can do so much with,
agreed,
you know, the sound stages and the backdrops and cue lines and...
Yeah.
I would love to have a sound stage to play with on a haunted house. I've never had that luxury.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. Yeah. One quick question that was in... sent in by someone.
Mm-hmm.
How do they handle the ticketing? So is it an additional price to get into Halloween Horror Nights? Are you able to do the rest of the park on that ticket? Do you know?
It's a separate ticket.
Okay.
They close the park down, they clear it out. If you've paid to do both day and night,
right,
then they'll give you a wristband. And if you have a wristband, then they'll cordon you off into a specific area so they can actually clear the park out, and then they can start letting people in for, you know, either, you know, with the wristbands or for the night.
Right.
You can buy multiple night passes if you want, mm-hmm. Season passes. They do a lot of local,
right,
for a while, I think that if you took the label off Pepsi or whatever.
Yeah.
They did that. But a lot of the attractions, the regular day attractions are still open.
Okay. So that was my next question. Yeah. So you can do a lot of what you would see during the day, mm-hmm. but at night without the lights and with actors and stuff.
And one thing I was going to ask is, they have, usually nowadays, it's between 5 and 9 attractions, depending on how they're breaking it up.
Yeah, there's...
Can you do all that in one night?
No.
I didn't think so.
First of all, like, if you go, like, during a peak night, you're going to be waiting in line for a haunted house for up to 2 hours.
Wow.
You know? And, I mean, they're interesting lines. You'll still see people running around. You know, they try to make it interesting so you're not just standing in line.
Right.
But you're still standing in line for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So there's only so many, you know, attractions you can do. And then the shows they have, you know, are, you know, specific times. So you can only do those in the, you know, specific times and stuff like that. So
right.
You want to go, you know, at least more than one night.
Yeah.
Just to get it all in, or try to get it all in on a non-peak night.
Okay. Right.
So non-peak night would obviously be earlier in the season, because they open like mid-September, I think.
Earlier in the season, or like during the week. You know, okay, Fridays and Saturdays, you're gonna
have the line experience.
Yes, if you go on a Friday night, you are going to see the line to end all lines.
Go on Halloween night and...
Not even get in the doors. Yay!
Right. So if you want to experience a line, which is scary enough, you go on a Friday or Saturday night. But they're usually open during the week, especially like closer to Halloween.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they, you know, usually Monday nights and Tuesday nights, but like through the rest of the week, they'll be open.
Right.
And I'm sure our experience, because we have to visit a lot of haunts on the quick.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're working on our own, and mm-hmm. we're lucky in that we're haunters that get to sneak out and see other haunts.
Yeah.
We're lucky to do that at all. But yeah, one of the things I've noticed is, as you said, early in the season, like first weekend they're open is usually mm-hmm. good. Or the first night they offer a Wednesday or a Thursday.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's usually a little bit less expensive on non-peak nights too.
Right, and to our listeners out there, if you've noticed what non-peak nights are in your area and you're seeing the same pattern we are,
let us know.
Just confirm it. We'd like to hear other people say the same thing.
Yeah, or contradict us, heck, if we're wrong.
Well, yeah.
Okay, hang on. I just pulled up the Halloween Horror Nights site on my phone. They are open September 16th through the 31st, but they start opening Thursdays on September 22nd. So it's not every weeknight. It's not every night. In fact, they don't even do like, well, they do a Hell Week, the 26th or the 31st this year. But like, you can be there Thursday the 22nd or Thursday the 29th in September.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be fairly chill. They're also open Sundays, and I'd imagine Sundays are pretty
tame. Sundays are usually pretty quiet too, yeah.
So Sundays are probably, in fact, they're open, I think, Sunday the 18th of September. That'd be, it sounds like a chill day.
Yeah, so, Thursdays and Sundays, you're not going to see the crowds.
Yeah.
And they are open some Wednesdays later in the season too, but you got to get further down. So, yeah, that's interesting.
So, yeah, if you were going to do a two-night, then one of those later Thursdays would probably be better.
You'd probably get everything done, don't
you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to go for a two-nighter, it sounds reasonable. It makes more sense than a Saturday-Sunday, because you're not going to do damn thing on a Saturday. Yeah.
Right, Friday and Saturday, you know, it's...
Cat attack.
And then the cats.
Then the cats attack. We made it 44 minutes into this episode.
I was going to say, we're
doing good.
Quiet up until now.
Yeah.
Well, they're being quite good. But no, that's actually very sage advice. I think it's sage advice with haunted attractions in general, though. If you
want to
go. But it's kind of weird. And we were talking about this when we talked about international haunting and so forth, about how in America, we have haunted attractions so deeply rooted and connected to Halloween that most of our haunts are only open 2 months out of the year at the most. Well, and
there's in Orlando, we had Terror on Church Street for a really long time.
And
you could probably do two shows on Terror on Church Street. That was amazing. And now I think there's one close to Disney in Old Town. It's a little place where they have gift shops.
Right. I think Terror on Church Street just closed, but I think we covered that in one of the news episodes.
They closed a while ago. But a lot of the people who did Terror on Church Street went to this one called Skull Kingdom.
Right.
And that was... That closed 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And then a lot of them migrated to this one that's in, just a different tourist area of town. And that's all open all year.
Okay, you're right. But I had the wrong one.
Yeah. I was thinking, so Old Town.
Yeah, Terran Old Town is the one I was thinking of.
Okay,
yeah.
Terran Old Town is
just
where...
Just closed.
Yeah.
But between Terran Church Street, Skull Kingdom, and then the
Old
one
Town,
in Old Town... I'm going to say that, you know, since I was a kid, there was a year-round scare.
And that's pretty unusual in Orlando. It's pretty unusual anywhere. Orlando's pretty fortunate to have that. I mean, San Antonio, we were at the...
Ripley's
there, and that's a separate conversation. That's not...
Yeah.
But I do know Universal is opening up a year-round Walking Dead attraction.
They are in Hollywood. I don't know if Orlando's going to do it.
Yeah, Hollywood.
But there's always been rumors between that Disney and Universal, one of them's going to open up a scare attraction or a haunted attraction for year-round. Because Disney's got their villains.
Right.
Well, and Disney...
And Universal has their classic monsters.
Yeah.
Well, Disney did Alien Encounters.
It's not there. Well,
I know! I'm so sad.
Somebody ought to experience this.
Oh, God.
It's so tragic. Oh, my God.
You know, so for years and years
so much
years
wine
and
in
years,
this conversation right now.
Since I was a kid, there's always been those rumors that Disney's either going to open the Villains Park and Universal's going to capitalize on their Universal monsters, and somebody's going to open up a park based around, you know...
Year-round park, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's always been those rumors, but there's never been anything solid.
And that's
sad.
And that's tragic, because I think one of the best things that could happen to this industry is more year-round haunting. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing escape rooms. Disney's now into the escape room business.
Yes.
It's because that's a year-round... Yeah, they just opened up a... It's a VIP business escape room thing. It's not open to the public right now, but they may. It's a corporate thing, but it may open up in the future. Who knows?
And they do their Not So Scary now, which I don't know if you guys know anything about that.
No.
They Halloween, they do a nighttime park thing too, and they call it Disney's Not So Scary.
Oh.
And they have a villains parade. Now the difference.
Oh, I have seen pictures from that.
Yeah, I've heard
now
about those,
the
yeah.
difference with that is at Universal, you cannot come in a costume.
Oh, okay.
But it the not so scary, they encourage you to dress up.
Gotcha. So
a lot of people will do Disney costumes and stuff.
Uh-huh. Huh.
And you can go dressed up and you can actually trick or treat and they'll do that. And then there's a villains parade. And
so it sounds like
meet and greet with the different villains and stuff like that.
Disney's kind of geared more towards a younger crowd.
Right. That's it's why not, they call it the not so scary.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we all know the character actors of Disney are incredible. I remember getting shade thrown at me by Jafar.
and that's the one good thing about the not so scary. If you are into the villains, they have villains that are they don't really bring out into the park so much,
right?
But they're there for the not so scary. So you can get photo ops with, you know, say Jafar or, you know, Hades from
Hercules
and stuff like that, like Yzma, you know, ones that they don't usually throw out into the park, they'll put in the not so scary. So you can get photo ops with some of the villains that you wouldn't normally see.
And that's pretty cool.
A cool thing, so
I mean, I don't know. I've never been able to do Universal Horror Nights, and I've always wanted to. Ever since I first started doing them, I've wanted to. But I'm from South Carolina originally. You're from Louisiana, Crystal.
Yeah,
and we're just not in the right geography for it.
Yeah.
Well, all the theme parks are getting into it. I know Busch Gardens does one now.
Yeah, I know.
I actually talked to a co-worker about that one. It's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, I never did that one, but I did hear that it's pretty good.
Yeah.
The theme park closest to me was called Carowinds, and they did Scarowinds for a while. But I never heard anything particularly good about it, so I never went.
Yeah.
And apparently, I don't know if they're still doing it or not.
All right.
So, yeah. But anyways, yeah. So, I think that's about all the time we have. We're pretty much running out of time now.
Yeah. We're a little bit over.
Not bad, though. No, this is a podcast. We don't have to, you know, sponsors we have to worry about or anything like that.
Not yet.
But what we do have to worry about is reminding you nice folks to please do not forget to like and subscribe and or follow us at all the places. First off, you can find this podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Thank you, Google, again, for getting off your butt and doing podcasts.
Yes.
And you can find the two of us, well, and Dawn, too, through proxy, at least this episode,
on
Facebook and Twitter, both at Haunt Weekly. It's facebook.com/hauntweekly and twitter.com/hauntweekly. Like, subscribe, all that jazz at those fine places.
Right. Thank you, Dawn, for visiting with us and being here.
Reminiscing and regaling us with the history of Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. That was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And to those of you dear listeners, Crystal and I will be back again next week with another regular episode of Haunt Weekly.
Yes, and we will put the conference reminders
onto
the Facebook page, as we did not go through them this time.
Yes, we did not do the full conference reminder list. Sorry, we knew we wanted to jump right into it with Dawn.
Right.
So, and obviously, good call.
Yes.
From the timing, good call.
You know, if you ever need somebody to talk to, I talk very well.
Yes, you do. I appreciate that. So, yes, we will put that on the Facebook page, and we will see you guys next week.